getting out of this is death. Diary entry. Elowin Nevon, age 9 phases, 5,030 phases after stone. Poppy says claiming a mature moonplume at such a young age makes me remarkable, but I don't feel very remarkable. Hadeon will never walk again because the bones fused back together but not in the right way. Poppy said nobody has the skills to re-break, then fix such delicate damage so deep without cutting him open and risking more harm. His moonplume may never fly because her wing is gammy. Because our makeshift hatching camp got sniffed out by a pack of doom quills just as Hadeon's egg began to rock, and I had to hide it in the warmth with him before it had a chance to fully hatch. Yes, I fought off the doom quills, but I would have lost if the massive moon plume that had been circling hadn't shown up and blazed the rest of them. Yes, I then climbed on her back and held on really tight for really long until she listened to my soft song. But I just did what I had to do to get my brother home. Because the creators wouldn't sing to me no matter how much I begged them to help. Now they won't shut up. Rave. Chapter 21. Rook scratches at the corner of his cell while I hum, sitting in the corner, tapping my foot against the ground to the tune in my head. I trace the dips and spines of the ceiling, hunting the bulbous balls of moisture hanging off the more prominent peaks, trying to guess which one will drip next. A game I've played on and off since I was dumped here. Not sure how long ago that was. Feels like a while. Perhaps those who tossed me in here think that by leaving me to rot in this shithole, I'll madden into a pulp, become pliable enough that when they finally present me to the Guild of Nobles, I'll mold to their stringent will. Unfortunately for them, I'm well practiced in the art of existing in a confined space, and there are many ways to bide time in a cell if you have a rich imagination. Heavy footsteps thump down the corridor, and I dim my sound, a small smile swelling my cheeks as Rook stuffs his blanket over his rebellious hole, tucks into a ball before it, and pretends to sleep. My gaze clings to a water droplet I'm certain is the next to fall, disappointment backhanding me when instead one lands atop the peak of my nose, making my face twitch. I frown, eyes narrowing on the wobbly globule. Drip, you stubborn bastard. A different one splats on my knee, and a sigh gusts past my dry, split lips. I'm terrible at this game. Not once have I gotten it right. So help me, I will crack the code by the time I'm marched to my doom. A figure storms past my cell in a flutter of thick white material, and a voice in the back of my mind questions why a Rooney would bother with a trip into Gore's septic bowels cluttered with half-digested traitors to the crown. Whoever it is stops before Rook's cell, crouching.
I heard you stole the wrong ring from the wrong fey.
The male rumbles in a deep, gravelly voice that skates across my pebbling skin. A voice I recognize. My heart flops against my ribs, gaze drifting to the broad, cloaked visitor as Rook feigns a stretch. The hooded male from the Hungry Hollow, now dressed like a Rooney. I tuck farther into the shadowed corner. I was so strong and composed outside the wind tunnel with my iron blade pressed to his member. Now I'm in bits in a cell, chasing drips of mildew, smelling like my own filth and ruin. I'm like a dragon mid-molt, and the last thing I want is that assessing stare poking me in my tender spots that are yet to fully calcify.
Costly mistake,
Rook forges past a faux yawn. The male grunts.
I've been looking for you all over, you know.
Rook's ears flick forward, nose twitching. He licks his paws, using them to swipe the hairs back on his face as he rocks up into a crouch.
Why?
Because someone I'm acquainted with saw you scurrying for the nearest sewer with a moon shard in your mitts.
My heart skips a beat. Why in this creator's forsaken world is he hunting moon shards? Rook kicks back his foot to scratch behind his ear.
I don't know what you're talking about.
I can get you out. Digging won't work. This place is ruined against anyone digging farther than a foot. And I have a saber-scythe tusk I'm willing to trade for the shard.
My brows lift. According to Ruse, saber-scythes drop their tusks every shed, but they're remarkably hard to find. I think back to the first time I purchased a sliver for Essie. Ruse said they don't dislodge until the beast is well into its spurt of growth, often swallowed by Gondor's volcanoes, since that's where saber-scythes flock to complete their shed, burrowed away from anything that might harm their delicate state. I also quickly found out they're worth 10 times their weight in dragon bloodstone, serving as a bonding agent most runies use for their etchings. Rook's nose twitches, his scratching foot coming slowly down to rest against the floor.
How big is the tusk?
The size of my leg.
My gaze drops to said leg, eyes widening.
Deal,
Rook spits, his response swifter than the snap of Rex's whip. I smile, pride warming my chest. Good for him. Love a happy ending.
I'll purchase your sentence and have you out by the rise,
the male says, just stalking by my cell when he stops, drawing a deep sniff of the air, his head turning in my direction slower than a setting aurora. My breath flees. His gaze rakes across my shadowed form, like he's trying to sweep past the curtains of filth and shadow to my unveiled face. I tuck my chin to my chest, loose tendrils of hair falling forward to curtain me.
Leave. Leave. Leave.
It's you,
he rumbles, and my heart drops, the hairs on the back of my neck lifting.
Come forth into the light.
Who died and made you king? I rasp past my ruined throat.
My pa,
he deadpans, and a laugh bubbles out of me, tapering off before the excess motion has a chance to rip my wounds and make them weep again.
Funny.
Silence reigns. He steps closer to the bars, arms crossed over his broad chest, the uncomfortable absence of sound dragging on for so long it pecks at me.
Were you waiting for something? I ask, frowning.
Yes, for you to shift into the light so I can see your face.
I snort laugh. Righteous asshole.
No, thank you. You'll have to step through those iron bars and drag me into the light yourself.
There's a moment of pause before he grips the lock hanging from my door, knuckles blanching. The metal creaks and groans, and he rips his arm down. I suck a sharp breath as the lock comes away. Broken. He lifts his hand and makes a show of loosening his fingers, letting the useless lump of metal fall to the ground with a clatter that echoes off the walls to the tune of my rallying heart. Fuck.
I'm not usually one to take things from a female that aren't given freely,
he rumbles, swinging the latch off the hook.
However, your voice reminds me of somebody I used to know, and I've spent 5 sleepless slumbers convinced I'm going mad.
He boots the door open, the sound of squealing hinges carving across my nerves, reminding me of times I was dragged from another cell, feet first, fingernails gouging the stone while I snarled through gritted teeth.
He takes the first step in, and I pull my feet back toward my bum, gritting my teeth against a bludgeoning howl as I push my weight against my shredded back and leverage myself to a wobbly stand.
"Hate to break it to you like this," I hiss,
"but I'd never seen you before that slumber on the south side of the wall."
"For your sake,"
he growls, stalking forward, packing the space full of his massive presence.
"I hope you're wrong."
"And if I'm not?" He steps into my shadow, almost close enough for me to reach out and touch him, my next breath laced with a drugging punch of his rich, molten scent. He flips back his hood, revealing that beautiful, hard face. My lungs snag at the sight of him. Lips pinched in a line, he steals another step forward.
"And if I'm not?"
"Vacht,"
he whispers, the scalding word aflame against my conscience. My spine stiffens, every nerve in my body tingling in all the wrong ways. The lantern overhead rattles, like something inside is trying to escape. One of its tiny panes pops, a shred of flame fluttering down into his cupped hand and cradled before my face like a mold of clay. His thick black brows collide, his face blanching as my teeth clamp together, heart seizing, eye bulging. I look at that flame like the spitting, scalding enemy it is, waiting for him to drag it across my flesh and paint a puckered trail. A choked sound slips out of him, like his lungs forgot how to work. He lifts a trembling hand as if to cup my cheek, leaving an inch of space separating us, the heat radiating off his palm akin to a ray of sunshine. His stare blazes back and forth across my face, tracing the slopes of me with devastating precision.
How?
Something about the way he rasps the word cuts me down the middle, like he's stuffing those big, strong arms into my frosty depths, churning my lake into a storm of slush. I open my mouth to speak, but all that comes out is a blow of frosty air. Tension stiffens in the space between us. The hand so close to cradling my face pulls back, crunching into a ball. He punches the wall behind my head with such force a hairline crack forms in the stone, weaving across my ceiling. A litter of mildew rains upon us.
"How?"
he bellows, and I growl, upper lip peeling back from canines aching to snap forward and sink into his flesh.
"I don't know what you're talking about,"
I snarl, wanting him out. Gone. Wanting the flame in his hand extinguished before it tills up any more of the hurt I've worked so hard to rid myself of.
"She speaks the truth,"
comes a wobbly voice from the opposite cell, from the dark-haired truth tune who only stopped crying 89 ceiling drops earlier. I thought she was asleep. The male frowns, rips his cinder stare off me, and stabs it over his shoulder in her direction.
"You a truth tune?"
"I am. The female is confused by your interest. She is also petrified of—"
"That's enough," I snip, my words ricocheting off the walls. The male turns his attention back on me, his all-consuming stare etched in so many shades of disbelief. He crushes the flame in his large, calloused hand, though I have only a brief moment of reprieve before he pulls a metal weld from his pocket and flicks back the lid, revealing a blood-red bulb of saber-scythe flame. My throat constricts, a strangled sound squeezing through the tightening space, a sound I want to crush from existence the moment it leaves my lips. He raises his other hand, the rough tips of his fingers sweeping a tendril of hair from my forehead, leaving a wake of tingling flesh.
"Get your hand off me,"
I seethe as he tucks the fall of inky locks behind my ear. His chest boils with a sound that makes me picture the ground shaking, the tip of his finger tracing the jagged scar on my forehead. A scar that can be seen by Dragonflame, the only substance in existence that can ignite a trail of long-ago runes and unearth their glowing ghosts.
Your head,
he rasps.
You've been mended.
Mended. Such a funny word, signifying the end of something. But every hurt has an echo, if you look deep enough. A wound is never fully gone. Don't remember getting that one. Not a lie. His gaze dips.
Your eye. What happened?
Tripped on a stone. His head banks to the side.
Did it reach up and punch you in the face?
I offer him a faux smile. Strangest thing. A beat of silence before he continues, so smooth and soft it chills me to the bone.
Who are you protecting, Moonbeam?
My frail, suffocating vengeance, flailing as it is. Perhaps my skewed vision is making me see things, but he has a look about him. Like if I tell him who really punched me in the face, the kill will no longer be mine, and I'm holding on to that promise of hope until I'm masticated by a dragon's maw or sliced from throat to navel. That's not my name, and I don't need you to fight my battles any more than I need your presence in this cell. He steals a single step back, snapping the lid shut on his weld, sealing the flame back into the ruined metal vial.
Prove it.
I frown. Excuse me?
Turn around, lift your tunic, and show me your back. If a stone can cause such damage to your face, I'm very interested to see just what it's done to pack this cell with the smell of so much blood.
My heart plops into my gut.
No. Always so stubborn.
He bites out, cradling the words like he fucking knows me. He reaches forward. Somebody sprints down the hall, cloaked in another white Rooney robe akin to the one this male wears, an obvious ruse, given his weld and affinity with Ignos. Unless he's multi-talented, I guess. The approaching Rooney slows by my cell, peering into the shadowed depths.
Sire,
he whisper hisses, the word pinching me. His eyes are wide with panic, stare bouncing between us both.
Guards are coming. Lots of them.
My brows pull together, gaze cutting back to the male standing before me, unmoving, unblinking. Sire. Fucking sire. Realization washes over me like a dunk of icy water, whipping all the warmth from my body. You're a king.
As I said.
There's a brief pause as he flicks up his hood, casting his face back in a shroud of shadow, though his eyes still glimmer like a crush of embers caught in the orbs.
Is that a problem, Moonbeam?
A swell of fiery rage packs my chest and mouth so full it's impossible to speak. To tell him yes, that's a problem. The shade, the fade, and the burn are each ruled by a different Vagor brother, each cut from the same vile cloth. I've seen King Fade from a distance, Cadoc Vagor. This male is not him, meaning he either rules the shade or the burn. The shade is said to be even more rotten than this kingdom. If rumors are anything to go by, the cold, shadowed expanse governed by King Tyroth Vagor, a cruel king with a heart said to fester from the loss of his queen. The burn? Well, few who venture deep into the sunny part of the world return to tell the tale, though it's said King Khan is savage and bloodlusting, that Rygun, his ancient saber-scythe, was too big to fit in any of the city hutches the last time he came to Gore, that he lets the beast hunt freely across his kingdom, firing cities with his blazing breath and feasting on his folk whom he cares little about. I'm not sure which option is worse, who I'd least prefer to be sharing this cell with right now, breathing the same filthy air. One thing's for sure. I wouldn't bow to any of them, even if a sword was notched at my neck. A stampede of booted steps echoes down the corridor while I hold his stare, the racket coming to a halt before my cell. In my peripheral, I note the shadowed silhouettes of heavily armored guards.
Rooney,
one of them bellows.
What are you doing in cell 73?
The king doesn't break my stare as he says,
I'm the resident healer. I was instructed to inspect this prisoner's wounds.
I give him an incredulous look.
Impossible. Everyone is under strict instruction not to enter that cell. She is our most dangerous captive.
I would be flattered, but there's no room for it beside the bubbling well of undiluted rage piling up my throat like a dragon about to wield its first flame.
I must order you to exit her cell. She's expected at trial before the Guild of Nobles. We're to escort her straight there.
Music to my ears. I don't want to spend another second in this monster's presence. Yes, resident healer, I say, serving him a sour smile. Kindly step out of my chambers. I have no need of your assistance, now or ever. The air between us becomes impossibly tight, and he grunts, stepping back. The guards flood my cell in a spill of blood-red armor and the smell of polished leather. A male grips me by my wounded shoulder and jostles me forward, a wince hissing past my clenched teeth.
She's been pinned,
the king proclaims, his voice a veiled death threat I want to scrunch up and stuff back down his throat. I don't want him whipping out his imperial cock for me. Certainly not when he doesn't bother to whip it out for his own folk. He eyes the guard like he wants to rip out the male's trachea.
Why? Because she speaks with Claude and Boulder.
I'm held in place while another guard unlocks the metal pole connecting my chains.
The very reason this cell was off limits. How do you know?
The king queries as I'm attached to an iron leash I consider using to strangle them all. Until I see the red elemental bead hanging from the lobe of one of the guards. Perhaps not.
She took out an entire unit in the Undercity, collapsed the lungs of 7 soldiers before she even began tossing her blades. She slaughtered another 12 in ways that would make your insides wither, forged a cleft in the ground that took another 6, then bit off the finger of a prestigious bounty hunter employed by the crown.
Well, good for me. I'd pat myself on the back if my skin wasn't flayed. Want a tussle? I ask the king, flashing him a complimentary grin he can take to my grave, wondering why he doesn't look anywhere near as outraged by my large body count as I expected him to be. If I win, you purchase my sentence and I go back to killing vile males with small cocks and enough ego to justify their sick behavior. And you get to go back to, well, hunting moon shards. I feel the guard's beady-eyed stare bouncing between myself and the incognito king, the latter stepping so close to me that barely an inch of space separates us. The world around us fades into oblivion as he looks upon me with such a fierce intensity I almost forget how to breathe.
Not much point anymore, since I've found the most important piece.
The air between us grows so tight, I'm certain one small tap will make it shatter. The next breath I pull crushes my breasts up against his solid, muscular chest. Well, off you go, I rasp. Collect your prize.
Hard,
he rumbles.
It's in a problematic position. Difficult to reach.
I snort. Please. I'm sure you have the resources to work it out, I mutter, lifting my chin, flicking a look at the soldier behind him. Let's get this over with.
So eager?
The king asks, and I release a mirthless laugh. Yeah, sure. I'm just itching to get drawn and quartered or served to the molten maws on a stick. said nobody ever. I'm led from the cell, down the hall, taking shuffled steps past caged folk clinging to their bars, watching me go by. But the only stare I can feel is his, drawing a crisscrossed trail over my back, my tunic no doubt stained in blotches of blood, both fresh and old. I swear the ground shakes. I'm shoved down another hall, free from his line of sight, marched toward a trial that'll pound the gavel on my fate. No point hoping for a good outcome. There is none. A thought that's almost freeing, that lifts a weight from my shoulders and makes my steps feel lighter. A smile splits my face as I'm nudged up a curl of stairs by one of the boisterous guards. Might as well have some fun before I die. Rave. Chapter 22. 8 guards escort me through a lofty hall, multicolored windows spilling a kaleidoscope of light that slathers the side of my face in too much warmth. I'm slow, every step a shuffled victory, my damp tunic clinging to the torn, tacky flesh on my back. Each forward motion feels heavier than the last, as if gravity is crushing me beneath the press of its thumb, slowly applying more pressure. More. Black spots begin to blot my vision as my leash is tugged by the guard ahead, luring me to turn a corner. We come to the base of a shadowed staircase, and I swallow a bludgeoning groan. If I'd known this walk would be so tiresome, I might have eaten my last serving of gruel rather than sliding it down the line like I've done with most of the others.
Keep walking,
the guard behind me growls, shoving me between the shoulder blades. A raise of crippling pain threatens to buckle my knees, and my body jolts, air sucking through my clamped teeth. A surge of warm wetness seeps down my spine. Cracking my neck from side to side, I tackle the staircase one wobbly step at a time until we're spat out onto a circular iron stage at the base of a domed amphitheater. I'm led forward a few jingling steps, the metal smooth and cold beneath my feet as my leash is connected to an iron loop poking up from the ground. Above me is a low banister that bans the entire circumference, hosting a ring of males, each flaunting more than one elemental bead. The nobles, plus the beady-eyed chancellor. They're garbed in vibrant robes that blend with the ceiling, a mural of molten moths mid-flight, boasting multicolored plumage and long feathered tails adorned with a fluffy tuft on the end that veils their poisonous spike. I look down at myself, smothered in blood and filth and who knows what else. Drawing a deep whiff of my shift, my face scrunches. I cut a glance at the leering nobles.
Apologies, I say, my voice echoing through the vast space. Forgot to bathe for our very important date.
Silence.
Never mind, prisoner 73,
I mutter in a forged baritone.
We know you've had a lot on your plate.
My guards thread back down the stairway, and my gaze rises to the second mezzanine that loops around the room. It's much higher than the one the nobles sit at, its banister waist-high on most folk standing behind it, looking down from their purchased perch. The ones who get a kick out of watching the nobles unravel lives. Can't imagine why. But to be fair, I intend to put on a show this day, so they'll get their bloodstone's worth. I scan the faces, fearful I might find someone I know, someone who might do something stupid, winning myself a kick to the chest when I see the incognito king staring down at me from his lofty place amongst the commoners. Fuck. Even though he's hooded, his face half cast in shadow, I still feel his stare shred across me, leaving a prickly trail. Not sure what I did to deserve his foul attention, but I wish I could take it back.
I rip my gaze away, looking to the empty stone throne set amongst the nobles' seats, wondering when King Fade is going to join the party. Perhaps he's making a late entrance? The Chancellor slams his gavel 3 times, my heart thumping in unison. He sets down the tool and breaks the seal on a scroll, unraveling it, signifying the start of my trial. My heart drops. I come to the grim realization that our boastful king must still be in Drelgod, disappointment lumping upon me. Damn, there goes all my fun. I was so looking forward to telling him he'd be better off shoveling Kolk shit than governing the Fade. Silence roars as the Chancellor leers down at me over his hooked nose, brown and clear beads hanging from his lobe, his ruddy beard whittled into twin braided tails.
Fade law states that those who hear the Creator's songs are obliged to wear elemental beads,
he says, his voice a conjuring drawl that echoes through the space, seemingly ruined to amplify sound.
It is first noted that you wear none, and that you are showcasing as a null.
The scribe 3 paces away from me, sitting behind a desk beside a white-robed Rooney, scratches at a scroll with a blood-red quill, the sound carrying so well it almost feels like the words are being etched into my flesh. I thought I was a null, I announce, shrugging. Flesh-ripping pain flares across my back that makes my insides shudder, my next words spoken past gritted teeth. Imagine my surprise when Claude whispered pretty words in my ear and helped me pulverize the lungs of all those soldiers. A sea of murmurs float down from above. The Chancellor's eyes narrow.
From what I understand, you spoke Claude's language fluently enough to suggest you've been hearing such words for a while.
I offer a wide smile. Beginner's luck.
Lie.
I flick a sideways glare at the broad, blonde-haired Rooney, my gaze dropping, scouring the 2 gold buttons adorning the central seam of his robe. An etching stick and a small musical note. Truth tune. He garnishes me with a stony stare.
Rude? And Boulder?
The Chancellor asks.
What of him?
I cock my head to the side. Haven't you ever wished the ground would split and chew on your enemies? Guess my dream came true. Lucky me.
Not a lie.
See? The Chancellor condemns me with a seething scowl, like he's picturing me being chewed by a hole in the ground as we speak. Clearing his throat, he begins reading from the scroll.
You, self-appointed as Prisoner 73.
He peers down at me, eyes narrowed, and my smile widens in unison with his deepening frown.
Are hereby charged for the murder of 23 soldiers of the crown.
25, I correct. And the room bursts with murmurs again as the Chancellor raises a brow.
Excuse me?
If he's going to read out my charge, he might as well get it right. Personally, I lost count, but the guard who led me here said I killed 25. The Chancellor opens his mouth to speak again, but I cut him off with a swift, also, I'd like it added to the record that I bit off the tip of Rex Zaros's finger. I only recently managed to flick out what was left of it from between my teeth.
That's enough.
Pity. He flays me with a stare, and even the scribe pauses his incessant scratching.
Do you find this amusing?
You misread me. I let all the humor fall off my face, my response a bite of bloody flesh spat at him with a sawtooth snarl.
I find it fucking tragic.
This time, there are no murmurs, just a gluttonous silence that grates my bones.
Truth.
Yes, it is.
Bring in the evidence,
the Chancellor bellows. I marinate in the seething echo of his outburst while a male comes up the shaft of stairs at my back, Toting two sacks, he dumps on the ground before me, then loosens the drawstrings. He begins pulling out flaps of preserved flesh, flopping them on the ground in a semicircle around me, each bearing letters carved with my own hand. Unmistakably. I'm certain nobody else has handwriting like mine. Certainly nobody old enough to be out there slitting throats and dumping bodies off the wall. I hope.
These were taken from confirmed victims of Fir Du'ath,
the Chancellor states.
Each of them important, upstanding members of our society. Their loss, crippling blows to the crown.
I practically preen, chest puffed, about to thank him for the compliment when he waves a familiar board at my face, adorned with three words etched in coal. Prisoner 73.
And this was your handwriting when you signed for your rations,
he says, a bemused look in his cruel eyes.
If you could even call it that. I'm certain my youngling could do a better job, and he's barely out of the crib.
Some of the nobles spill a roll of laughter that deflates my chest and makes me feel entirely too small, makes my cheeks burn. I learned to write with a piece of coal on the ground of a cell, and no matter how hard I try, I can't stop my words from looking like I'm still scratching them upon the stone. Every letter is a sooty ghost tilled from my past, but I refuse to let them beat me. I click my tongue, glancing from skin slab to skin slab as the guard continues to slap them upon the floor. Well done! You possess a brain cell. I glance up again, holding the Chancellor's beady glare. I would cheer, but I'm certain you'll do enough of that this slumber while you're staring at your floor-length mirror, fisting your microcock. Gasps rain upon me as the Chancellor's face reddens, the veins in his temples pushing to the surface. He opens his mouth, and I can see by his narrowed eyes that he's thinking about using a phrase. One I've used more times than I can count, exhibited by the flaps of flesh decorating the floor at my feet. His lips thin. And he clears his throat, lifts his chin.
You do not deny that you took the lives of these individuals?
I look up, straight into the shadowed eyes of the incognito king who just won't stop watching me, wishing he'd kindly fuck off. A one-shoulder shrug as I meet the Chancellor's stare again, threads of pain lancing across my flesh like fiery veins. Seems a bit pointless, given the evidence, wouldn't you say?
I do not appreciate your attitude,
he scolds, the other nobles murmuring between each other while they leer down on me, passing me looks of disgust, disbelief, rage. Well, apologies for hurting your feelings. He opens his mouth, but I cut in, again. I, however, do not appreciate being forced to take out the population's filth because this kingdom is run by an imbecile who believes that having a cock, three beads dangling from his ear, a cruel dragon, and a powerful army means he doesn't have to iron out the kinks in his rumpling society. The upper mezzanine erupts in a riot of sound, the nobles looking between each other, some of them throwing their hands in the air as they heave words toward the Chancellor. Like it's somehow his fault I possess a brain that thinks, a mouth that speaks, but lack the self-preservation to avoid using both while standing in their presence. Good. Hope I'm making enough of a spectacle that the nobles will be satisfied with my capture, that Rek will be given something else to chase, and the Ath will flip from the fire, even if it's only for a little bit. If I'm going out, it might as well be in style. It's not like I've got anything to lose. Not anymore. The Chancellor hammers his gavel against the table three times over, silencing the racket.
You would disrespect our king so publicly,
he bellows, cheeks red like his ruddy cloak. I cock a brow.
Is that a rhetorical question, or did you want me to answer?
The nobles murmur between each other while I rock back and forth on the balls of my feet, desperate to be done with this. I have a bowl of slop calling my name. Again, I peek up at the mezzanine. He's still watching, arms crossed over his broad chest. I sigh, pick at some of the filth beneath my nails, flick it away. I'm incredibly bored with this conversation. Can we get to the point where you condemn me to execution for taking out the trash? That's the part I'm most excited about.
You want to die?
The Chancellor asks, not bothering to mask his shock. No, I murmur, picking another curl of filth free. I'm just so sick of looking at your ugly face that death is starting to sound rather cushy. His upper lip peels back from his canines, and I'm certain the vein in his temple is going to burst. I throw him a wink, though considering my other eye is still half congealed, it probably looks more like a blink. I tried.
What's your plea?
He grinds out. Guilty. Of all charges.
She does not lie,
the truth tune states.
Wouldn't dare.
I glance over my shoulder at the scribe, meeting his wide-eyed stare. You can probably tack on a few more charges, too. I'm sure I'll fill the quota if you look hard enough. I'm practically a one-folk show. Another swell of murmurs. I'm surprised they still have things to talk about.
All those in favor of prisoner 73 being drawn and quartered next Aurora Rise?
I ignore the frantic thump of my heart as over half the nobles raise their hands, including half the crowd packed into the mezzanine. I lift my hand too. Most would probably prefer the Colosseum, but I'd much rather be sliced open while my heart's still beating than be served to a thunder of fire-breathing dragons. Thank you very much.
All in favor of feeding her to the molten maws?
Another flock of hands rise, and the scribe counts them quietly.
It's a draw,
he calls out, gaze cast on the mezzanine, appearing to recount. I frown. Surely not. I count too, looking up in time to watch a familiar hooded Rooney raise his hand, like he's lifting a gavel of his own, casting a vote.
Oh, no matter,
the scribe bellows.
Dragons it is, by one vote.
My blood chills, my rapidly beating heart making my head spin, certain I'm going to pass out. Not that it stops me from slaying the incognito king with a glare I hope he feels all the way to his bones. I should be able to die how I want to die, damn it. The king dips his head, and I picture myself lobbing it off his shoulders and watching it thump upon the floor. But then the chancellor slams his gavel against the table again. I flinch, gaze plummeting in unison with my guts.
It's settled. Prisoner 73, you will be led to the Colosseum come next Aurora Rise, and the bell will toll in your name. May the creators have mercy on your tarnished soul.
Rave. Chapter 23. I'm escorted back down the long, twisting tunnels of Gore's notorious prison, past cells that smell as rotten as I do, past folk who cling to their bars with blanched hands, looking at me through wide eyes, faces gaunt, lips cracked and sapped of color. We pass a boy with his cheek pressed against the bars, his eyes so glazed and sightless I almost wonder if he's... He blinks. Pupils tightening, gaze shifting to me. The strings of my stony heart tug, because I recognize those yellow irises, that flock of matted golden curls. On a foggy Aurora Rise not too long ago, I found him wandering the ditch, blood spilling from his nose that looked as crooked as it does now. Bruises in places that told me someone much stronger had taken their anger out on him. I'd given him an Elding orb, asked if he wanted my help in any way. He'd pushed the orb back into my palm and told me he wanted to do it himself. I look away, a shiver scurrying up my spine where it explodes across my shoulders, down my shredded back. I'm nudged into my cell, stumbling to a stop. One of the guards unclips me from the leash, reattaches my mobility-restricting pole, and kicks me. Hard. Panic erupts beneath my ribs as I pitch toward the back wall, certain I'm about to rip half my face clean off, my feet clamped so close together it's impossible to kick my foot forward and catch myself. Instead, I tip my body to the side and tuck into a ball. My shoulder collides with the wall, the top half of my back grating down the rough-hewn rock in an explosion of teeth-gnashing agony, violent aftershocks coursing through me, my flesh lit with the whipping pain of 1,000 lashes. A deep, searing scream wrangles up my throat, seeming to echo off the walls, the tapered end of it chased by a chilling silence. Hissing through the aftermath, I tap my hand against the floor to the beat of my calming song while letting my eyes slit open, narrow on the offending guard. He picks my broken lock off the ground, then leers at me like it's my fault a king with a fist of iron crumbled it free. He secures my door with a new padlock he plucks off the latch of an empty cell and leaves with the rest of my armored entourage, their heavy footsteps fading into oblivion. He's lucky I'm chained and secured in a cell, otherwise I'd have his heart in my squeezing fist for making me scream.
"Guessing it didn't go well?"
Rook asks from somewhere so close I can feel his whiskers twitching against my arm. "As expected," I mutter past gritted teeth. He reaches through, settling his claw on my arm, and I thank the creators he's getting out. The world needs more folk like him. I place my hand atop his for a brief moment before letting it drop. He does the same. There's the sound of the slop cart rolling down the tunnel, of bowls sliding across the floor, followed by the sloshy tune of ravenous consumption. A bowl skitters into my cell, and I look at it, feeling none of the hunger I was experiencing earlier, the hollow ache replaced with gut-churning dread. I use my foot to nudge it left, since Rook is apparently getting out soon. The bony male pauses his frantic gorging, slop dribbling from his beard as he looks at me.
"No,"
he rumbles, sliding the bowl back into my cell.
"You will starve."
I look straight into his sunken eyes. "I'm to be offered to the dragons next Aurora Rise. It's wasted on me." Everyone seems to pause their feeding frenzy, silence feasting on the echo of my words.
"I am sorry,"
the male murmurs. "So am I. Sorry I won't get the chance to avenge Essie's death, and that I'm leaving this beautiful, broken world. I love living, painful as it's been at times. I love the colors of our kingdom and the way our clouds are ever changing, ever shifting. I love the way the dragons soar through the tombstone-riddled sky, entirely untethered. Love the feel of fallen snow peppering my skin and the way a frosty, southbourne breeze nips at my nose, numbing the tip of it like an icy kiss. The backs of my eyes burn as I think of that little wonky moon I'll probably never see again. I love that most of all." I offer the male a soft smile, pushing the bowl beneath the bars again. This time, he takes it. Diary entry. Elowen Nevan, age 18 phases, 5,039 phases after stone. Austern Vagor, King of the Burn, came to visit Ma and Pa and, well, me. Since I'm now 18, I'm apparently mature enough to be marketed off to the highest bidder, like livestock set for slaughter. At least, that's what King Austern thought, that Pa would agree to an arranged bind between me and one of his sons who has cruel eyes and an even crueler smile, simply because the Shade has a swelling need for agricultural produce we're struggling to service. Too bad for Austern. I told Pa I'd rather eat nothing but my Moonplume's shit for the rest of my existence than pair with Tyroth Vagor, and meant it. Pa said I have a foul mouth, that if I grew up in the volcanic plains like he did, I'd have been made to shovel fawny cod dung for an entire phase for that single comment alone, or be whipped for my insolence. I told him I'd happily take a whipping over Tyroth Vagor. Pa said that's exactly why he left that place, and that he wouldn't sell me for all the grain in the world. Then he kissed me on the forehead, called me remarkable, and told me to spend some time with Slatra and Alum so kings could talk politics without a foul-mouthed princess listening in. I love Pa, but I wish he'd stop calling me remarkable. If I could squish that word like a bug and pop it from existence, I would. I asked Hadion if he'd like to come with me to the hutch, but he just stared at the wall, like he always does. I accepted long ago that he never came home from Netherin. Not really. I swore I wouldn't leave him there, but I did. He doesn't laugh anymore. He doesn't eat butterberry chews. He doesn't speak. Which means he also doesn't argue when I push him into the hutch so he can watch me work on a loom's wing that's growing stronger with each passing phase. Honestly, I think she'll be sturdy enough to take her first flight soon. Since he was a little boy, all Hadion wanted was to ride on the back of his own moon plume. Perhaps if I can give him that, he'll smile again. Rave. Chapter 25. My foot taps against the floor while I hum soft and slow, Ballad of the Fallen Moon whipping through the otherwise eerily silent cells, most of the other prisoners fast asleep, hidden in some pocket of non-reality where I hope they're happier, more comfortable, healthy and free. Given the fact that the Incognito King watched from the shadow of his hood as I sang the same song in the Hungry Hollow, seeing him stride down the prison tunnel in a flutter of runy white is fitting. He stops before my cell, arms folded over his barrel chest. "Go away," I rasp, letting my eyes sweep shut.
"You don't even know why I'm here."
"Don't want to." 0% interested. My luck jiggles, and I open my eyes to see him delving a key into it, clonking it open. I sigh. "Wonder how your brother feels about you thieving his keys and breaking his prisoners free."
"I'm not breaking you out, so don't get your hopes up."
I snort laugh. "Charming." He kicks the door open, stepping into my foul-smelling chamber.
"And my brother has eyes in only one direction,"
he mumbles, crouching before me, encasing me in a robust medley of his warm scent. A lush comfort in this harsh place, which I ignore the pleasure of, choosing to breathe through my mouth. "Well, feel free to tell him I'm sorry I didn't get a chance to kill him before I died. I was really looking forward to it."
"I have no doubt,"
he says, producing another key from his pocket that he uses to unbolt the bar connecting my two chains, placing it on the ground beside me. He fails to unshackle my wrists or ankles, meaning he's got plans for me. Plans I want nothing to do with.
He stands, towering above me, blocking the light spilling from my lantern.
Up.
Die in a ditch, or better yet, a coliseum, getting feasted on by a flock of molten moths. I'll meet you there.
Asshole. I sponge a little satisfaction from his rumbling sigh. Even if I wanted to stand, I'm not sure I could. I may have put on a show with the trial, but my entire body feels like a frayed seam. It hurts to breathe, to blink. It hurts to tap my tapping foot. There's something surging through my veins that's making me nauseous and cold. I usually like the cold, but this is different. This cold feels wrong, wedging into my marrow like it's masticating me from the inside out to make space for itself.
Now is not the time to be stubborn, Moonbeam.
Wrong. There's only one thing males see in a shackled female. I seethe, my words laced with enough venom to stop a heart. If you want that, you can take it right here so my cellmates can see what a monster you are.
A low rumble boils in his chest, making my skin pebble.
I'm not that sort of monster, Prisoner 73. I would not take pleasure from you were it not given freely. Now stand on your own, or suffer the embarrassment of being picked up and carried.
His words wedge between my ribs and stab me where it hurts, my withering pride, the remnants of which I'm determined to take to my impending grave, tied to the stake he sentenced me to die upon.
Your choice,
he growls.
Make it.
I did make a choice. You took it from me.
Because it was the wrong one.
He reaches out as if to grip me around the shoulders. A snarl rips up my throat, and I snap my teeth at his fingers. I'm doing it.
Then do it.
Not until you turn around.
Another rumbling sigh before he spins, giving me the privacy I need to suffer through what's going to be a monumental task I'm not sure I have the capabilities to achieve. Right now, the ground is my friend. Unless I'm standing, then it's my enemy. At least with his back turned, he won't see me crumble.
Any progress?
Mentally strangling you as we speak, I mutter, setting my hands on the ground to my left. I pinch my trembling lips together and shove all my weight into my palms, rolling into a wobbly crouch. The pin in my shoulder grinds against bone, bolts of pain shooting through my arm. Shit. I squeeze my eyes shut, snap them open, and shove up, rocking to my feet. Warmth dribbles down my back as I sway, as my surroundings split, converge, split, converge.
You're not going to fall, are you?
I lift my chin, steady my spine, stare at the back of his head while lit with a blaze of retribution.
Course not. I've never been more sturdy in my life.
Good,
he says, then stalks from the cell with a dash of his white robe, condemning me to follow with a curt,
"This way."
I'm led through a tangle of corridors to a quiet tunnel with a single door at the end, nerves popping beneath my skin as the incognito king pulls the door open and gestures for me to pass, to enter ahead of him.
You first,
I rasp with a steadying hand against the wall, not believing a word he said about not being that sort of monster. He's a Vagor, a tyrant. Tyrants lie to themselves as much as they lie to others. I know what happens in this prison. I've heard enough stories to wither my guts for eternity. If he's going to have his way with me, I refuse to walk into that room blind. I'd rather force him to look me in the eye as he ruins another part of me. Make him feel every fracture, every bruise. He stands still for a long, hard moment, then flops back his hood and moves into the room, not stopping until he reaches the other side. He turns and leans against the wall,
crosses his arms, and waits like a stone statue carved by the creators themselves. Strong jaw, chiseled cheekbones, muscular neck. Every angle hacked with such precision, he's almost painful to look at. Frowning, I shuffle forward, easing into the room lit by a jar of captured moonlight set on one of the many shelves lining all four walls. Impressive. Those are pretty hard to come by. I note the tall mender's pallet and padded chair beside it, my gaze whipping to the female standing in the corner, her hair a crop of brown curls that match her eyes and skin, but contrast with the floor-length Rooney robe she's garbed in. She gives me a soft smile that does nothing to stop my heart from plummeting. I don't bother taking in the buttons pinning together the front seam of her robe, the ones that symbolize her strengths. I already know what I'll see. She can flesh thread. This better be a threesome, I grind out.
I'm not one to share,
the king says, his voice low and steady.
But if that's what you really want, it can be arranged once your back is healed.
He obviously thinks he's hilarious, but I'm not laughing. My pulse a violent churn I can't seem to slow. The Rooney takes a step toward me, her face still warmed by a comforting smile. Greetings, Prisoner 73. I'm Bia. Why don't you let me help you remove your tunic so I can take a look at your back? There's no point healing me, I growl, cutting a glare at the king. It would be a wasteful misuse of this female's skill and energy.
Bia has been well compensated for her service and is more than happy to help.
Does she know I'm destined for the Colosseum? His lips tug into a tight line, so I stab my stare at Bia instead. Do you? I do, she whispers. Then why bother?
Because you're in pain,
the king announces, like that's an answer at all. Pain that'll stop once I'm fed to the dragons. Please, Bia steals another step forward. We don't have much time if I'm to do my best work. My foot slides back. She stills, and though the king doesn't shift from his spot against the wall, something locks into place in the void between us, as though physical strings knot around my ribs, stretch across the room and tether to his, making it impossible for me to draw a single breath without him noticing. My skin nettles, and I become primitively aware that he's waiting for me to run. That he will chase. He tips his head, as if in silent appraisal of my tumultuous inner monologue, which just pisses me off. I'm bluntly aware that in my current state, I'd make it two steps before he'd be upon me, dragging me back to this very position, waiting for me to concede. Damn it. You will leave your weld at the door.
I have three, Moonbeam.
The one with the dragon flame, Sire. A line forms between his brows, gone the next moment as he reaches into his pocket and pulls out his weld, tossing it through the air. A perfect throw that plummets into my outstretched hand. I lob it down the hall, hearing it clatter across the stone. This is such bullshit. I move farther into the room, scanning the work table that's littered with jars of tinctures, vials, bowls, etching sticks, and containers packed full of medicinal tools. Too many things that remind me of Essie. The sooner this is done, the sooner I can leave. With my heart lodged in the back of my throat, I move toward the chair, unpicking the buttons of my loose tunic. I was kidding about the threesome, I snip, releasing the final two while murdering the king with a glare. There is no reality where I'd willingly fuck you. He doesn't break my stare as he says, almost too soft for me to hear,
Turn around, Moonbeam. Take a seat in the chair so Bia can get started.
I grind my teeth so hard, I'm surprised they don't crumble, fingers clenched around the seams of my shirt. There is no point in either of them seeing my shredded skin. None. I'm so much stronger than these slashes on my back. The story they tell, a rippling echo I don't want to be heard by anyone. An echo I'd rather take to my grave than sit here all slumber while they digest it, keeping it alive in some form or another. Behind me, I sense Bia stepping into my atmosphere, her hands coming up to help me ease the tunic partway down, exposing my shoulders. She gasps, pausing. Moving around the side of me, her glossy-eyed gaze trails across the bared window of flesh from my neck to navel, tears puddling her lower lids. Confused, I look at her robe, pinched in place by more gold or diamond buttons than I've ever seen on a single seam, my blood chilling at the sight of the one closest to her nape, a tiny dragon blowing a mushroom of flames. This Runi doesn't need dragonfire to ignite the trail of past runes because she's blessed with dragon sight. She can see them with her own eyes, meaning she's seeing everything.
What is it?
The king's voice hacks through the room like the swing of a sword, and my heart skips a beat. Another. Bia meets my stare, and I shake my head the slightest amount. Please don't. Please don't make me go back to that place. Nothing, sire, she whispers, blinking, dashing a tear from her cheek. Relief floods through me like a gulp of icy water. The damage is more extensive than I was expecting. I will need to retrieve more supplies from the storage closet down the hall. With the king's nod, Bia eases from the room, closing the door behind herself, leaving the space less full, yet somehow brimming. I clear my throat, fingers fisting my tunic, the silence between us tangible. A clay-like substance that could be molded into one of two things, a war horn or a waving white flag. This, I rasp, jerking my chin at the table of tinctures,